Yeah, as Julie kind of prayed us into before we got that between summer and fall feeling in the air, and that certainly matches.
Well, just the other year, late in 2017, I found myself lonelier, sadder, more stressed out, and less hopeful than I wanted to be. There were a lot of reasons for that. Some of this was just midlife. Entering my mid-40s, needing to catch up with some maybe long overdue inner work. Some of it was the times that we live in. There was stuff in the news at the time that was for me resurfacing some old and significant pain in some new ways. Some of it was just circumstantial. It's weird how like a small event can sort of set you off. Appeared to be like an innocent email from an old friend of mine. This kind of opened up some pretty raw things in me I hadn't seem coming. And all that to say, though, there I was, for a variety of reasons, late 2017, a kind of lonely and sad and stressed out, among other things. Eventually, as I've shared here a few times, has sent me in search of a therapist who I saw for a good bit of last year. It also, though, pushed me into a long, kind of year-long version of an ancient set of spiritual practices that I'd been meaning to try for a number of years. These spiritual practices are called the spiritual exercises of Ignatius of Loyola. They're named after the kind of psychological spiritual genius that devised these practices hundreds of years ago, Ignatius. Ignatius was a Renaissance era failed knight. Dates him a bit that he was a failed knight, but in the early 1500s, entering his own early midlife crisis, he was recuperating from a gunshot wound in war. And during his long, lonely, painful recovery, he became captivated by the life and teaching of Jesus and by the lives and examples of some of the people that have followed Jesus over the centuries. And eventually this led Ignatius to found a company within the Catholic Church that they called the Society of Jesus, or better known to us today as the Jesuits. And for priests who wanted to join the Jesuits, Ignatius designed a kind of a month-long training program. It was a curriculum called the Spiritual Exercises. It was a series of set prayers and practices were designed to help you become a committed friend and follower of Jesus. And for people that didn't want to become Jesuit priests, didn't have that much time to give this experience, Ignatius designed a nearly year-long version of the same program that became known as the 19th Annotation. I don't know what all the numbers stand for, but for whatever reason, this is called the 19th Annotation of these practices. And so with the guidance of a book and a friend of mine, that's what I did last year, this 19th Annotation of this ancient practice, the long, slow, very much part-time version of the spiritual exercises of Ignatius.
Sadder.
Now, I'm not going to try to sell you anything here. I hope you never feel like I'm trying to sell you anything. Certainly not going to try to sell you on that particular experience. If that is intriguing to you, I'd be happy to talk some time and figure out how you can have that year-long experience as well. But even the part of it I want to talk about today, this experience didn't wipe away my life as it stands. It wasn't like a magic pill that gave me a different, shinier, perfect me. That's not available, thank God. I'm kind of like my life as it is, like warts and all. But my experiences with the exercises, they did really help ground me in a more engaged and wholehearted life in the midst of everything that's going on. It helped ground me in a more resilient, really more joyful life, a less lonely way, too, through this particular season of my life. And today I want to teach you, or if it's familiar, kind of reteach or remind you about one part of these exercises, a part that really helps Jesus be less of an idea or merely a historical person. But I want to teach this practice that helps bring the teaching and life of Jesus to life in the present, as Jesus is alive with us today. It's a practice that's designed to help us experience something that feels like a friendship with Jesus. And a growing friendship with Jesus has been at the very top of my experiences of a life of faith. The practice at the heart of these Ignatian exercises is imaginative reading and prayer in the life and teachings of Jesus that we encounter in the Bible's four Gospels. And today I'd like to teach you or maybe remind you or encourage you to try doing that. And so we're going to try it first on this week's passage we were given in these summer readings we have in our Bible calendar. It's from Luke 13. I'll read it first.
It
says, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath.
Priests who wanted to
a woman was there who had been disabled by a spirit
designed,
for 18
kind of a
years.
Training
she was bent over and couldn't stand up straight. When he saw her, Jesus called her to him and said, "Woman, you are set free from your sickness." He placed his hands on her, and she straightened up at once and praised God. The synagogue leader, incensed that Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, responded, "There are 6 days during which work is permitted. Come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath day." The Lord replied, "Hypocrites, don't each of you on the Sabbath untie your ox or donkey from its stall and lead it out to get a drink? Then isn't it necessary that this woman, daughter of Abraham, bound by Satan for 18 long years, be set free from her bondage on the Sabbath day?" When he said these things, all his opponents were put to shame.
Now, I'm not going to
but all those
try
in the crowd
sell you
rejoiced.
Here. I hope you never feel like I'm trying to sell you anything.
He was
certainly
doing.
Not going to try to sell you on that particular.
So, as with anything we read, certainly anything like from a sacred text like the Bible, there are a lot of different ways we could read it. Actually, a lot of good ways too.
This experience didn't.
You could read this passage like historically. It's very old. We could ask what this passage kind of meant and what it's meant over the years and what that might mean for us today. So, for instance, you could ask like, how do we read a passage like this without being anti? Semitic. Luke is the one non-Jewish biographer of Jesus in the Bible. He's writing primarily to a non-Jewish late first century audience as well, so they can hear the story of the life of Jesus, and it can make sense, this kind of Jewish story in a non-Jewish culture. And passages like this have often been read with this pretty serious anti-Jewish spin. Like there are all these really uptight Jewish synagogues with these kind of mean, uptight rabbis. And that made really people follow all these laws that didn't help them. And then Jesus showed them a better way, the Christian way of healing, forgiveness, and freedom. And that reading would be like 90% wrong and like kind of troubling and dangerous. Because first off, modern Judaism, it did emerge from this very period, kind of first, second century Pharisaical Judaism. But it's had a lot of time to develop and change over the many centuries since then to become its own thing. So you can't understand like today's Jewish people or today's Judaism just by reading these stories. Secondly, maybe more obviously, everyone in this story is Jewish. Like the synagogue leader, the woman with a major back problem, Jesus, the crowds that loved what Jesus was doing, the opponents that did not like what he was doing, all of them were Jewish. And so whatever dispute they were having that we, many centuries later, are peering in on, they had it within early first century Judaism. At the time, they were not talking about the benefits of being Jewish or Christian, but just like different ways to be Jewish. So the history of this passage, like, that's really interesting from that angle. I think it's important for how, for instance, we relate to Judaism today. For the great majority of us, we're likely not Jewish. It's important for how to connect to Jesus, who lived within this Jewish tradition, if again, like most of us, you're not Jewish. So it's important, it's interesting to read a passage or any passage from the Bible like this historically. What did it mean then, and what can we learn about how it's been viewed over the centuries?
The Lord replied, "Hypocrites."
Or you could read, this is probably a little more common, you could read a passage like this for its ideals and its principles. Like, what are the ideas it teaches? What does it mean that Jesus is a healer, for instance? How much of healing is no longer having a physical problem that you had, a change from sick to healthy? How much, given that we'll all like die of some kind of physical problem one day, no matter how faithful we are, how much of healing is also something like coming to peace with our failing bodies, finding purpose and joy and freedom, even though we're sick, even though we have physical problems?
Actually, a lot of good ways, too.
Or why does this woman have a bad back? And how does Jesus heal her? It said she'd been disabled by a spirit for 18 years, which is like not a way that most of us would talk these days. And so does that mean like an evil spiritual force, like some kind of demon? Satan gets referenced in this passage. Had attacked her body 18 years or in kind of an ongoing way for 18 years? Or is that just a first century way of understanding what we might consider a purely physical problem? Or is it kind of somewhere in the middle, which I think it is for what it's worth, like a way of acknowledging the many and profound ways that our minds and our spirits and our life are tied up with the condition of our bodies?
Uptight Jewish synagogues,
any long state of being unwell is like kind of an affront too, kind of an accusation against life as it was meant to be.
the Christian way of healing.
Grace and I have this friend who's a research anesthesiologist who studies the many links between our past emotional traumas and other life experiences and our physical bodies and the pain we experience. It turns out there are way more connections than I would have even thought. We can't separate the state of our bodies and our physical health from our minds and our life experiences that we might call mental or emotional. We're embodied people. Everything about us is connected.
Obviously, everyone in this story,
I personally think this has a lot to do with what might have happened in this passage
leader,
as Jesus freed this woman from a back problem that had been bothering her for 18 years. And it didn't just have like a purely physical but anatomical origin,
so
but like a more complicated
they were having that we,
emotional
many
life
centuries
experience,
later,
spiritual
in on, they had it within.
Anyway, I'll just say, like, those are just like samplings. There are many ways of engaging with this passage or any other Bible passage historically or ideologically, like with the history.
So the history of this passage, like, communicated
to us.
Really interesting.
And that's all important, but
it's
not always very personal.
For how, for instance, we relate
some of you
to
got restless while I was doing that bad job. Why is he like, I'm not interested in that. Get it, right? That's the point I'm making. All right. It doesn't bring you peace or joy or direction today. It doesn't feel timely.
If again, like
reading this passage for its history or its
so
principles,
it's
like, certainly doesn't make
a
Jesus your friend.
From the Bible like this.
So Ignatius had this other way he suggested, in addition to those things, that we could read the life of Jesus. Ignatius encourages us to read these passages with a whole imagination engaged. Trusting that a living Jesus can involve us in these old stories and words, even though they're from the past, that they can, and they're from far off lands, other people long ago. Ignatius says, slowly read a passage like this. See where you find yourself. In this story.
Given that we'll all, like, die of
so I'm going to invite you to try this with me. I'm going to suggest some ways you might find yourself in the passage and read it again.
Like coming to peace with our
wonder if like you can find yourself in the center of the story.
And freedom, even
are you the woman with the bad back? Or someone with some other
why
kind of difficult physical condition? Can you imagine Jesus placing his hands on you and telling you that you are free?
Which is not a way that most of us would talk. These days,
like feeling
so
that,
that mean
in
like
the body,
an evil spiritual force,
what's
like
that,
some kind of demon. Satan gets referenced in this passage.
Maybe it's not just a physical thing.
Years,
maybe you can relate
kind of
to like the stagnancy and discouragement of a problem that runs 18 years deep. What does it feel like to
really
have such an
problem,
old
or is it
problem?
Kind of somewhere in the middle?
How would that become the story of your life? Like, I'm the person who has filled in the blank. Like, I'm the person who has failed. I'm the person who gets rejected. I'm the person who has this pain or this loneliness. How does that old problem become your public story, too?
Like, kind of an
like
affront
what
too,
others
kind of
see when they look at you.
Life as it was meant to be.
Sort of like an accusation against you.
Grace and I have this friend who's a research
what would you need to be free for this
who studies the many links between
story
our past
anymore.
Emotional traumas
what would
and
it take
life experiences
what would it take to
like
straighten up and,
bodies and
praise God, not as like a forced thing you try to do at church, but as that something just kind of emanates from you, like water flows. Kind of joy, gratitude, wonder kind of flow from you. What would do
that?
Or maybe you hear the story and you can relate to Jesus. Like maybe you're aware of someone with a big old problem that hasn't been solved. You're in relationship with someone you care about who's chronic pain or chronic struggle. Maybe you feel like Jesus has power or resources that you don't have. Fair enough, probably true. But like what do you have that would bring greater freedom to this person?
How
could you perhaps be a powerful presence or voice
Bible
of love
historically
to this other person.
Or ideologically, like with the history.
Or maybe in this story you don't connect to one of the characters. You're going to find yourself on the periphery. That works as well.
Personal.
Just watching it.
Some of you got restless.
Imagine ourselves in the crowd of people.
I'm not interested in that. Get it, right?
So noticing what reaction we have.
Doesn't bring you peace
are we
or joy
like
or direction today. It doesn't feel timely. Reading this
like
passage
others, are we
its
excited?
History or its principles. Like certainly
does this interaction offend us in some way, bother us,
so
or does it kind of encourage
way,
and delight
and
excite us?
That we could read
I'm going
to
read this
Ignatius
passage, this encounter, one more time.
These
in this imaginative reading in the life of Jesus, we often will read a passage two or three or four times. And this time, try and
words,
practice with
even
me.
They're from
you can
the
read
past,
the words that are in your program if you like.
Lands,
you can just listen. You can even close your eyes if you're comfortable doing that in a room of people. Certainly, it's easier to imagine that way. But ask yourself, like, do I find myself in the story somewhere?
I'm going to invite you to try this with me. I'm going to suggest some ways you might find yourself in the passage and read it again.
Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on
the
Sabbath. The
story.
A woman was there who had been
bad
disabled
back,
by a spirit.
Or someone with some other kind of difficult physical condition.
Years.
Can you imagine Jesus
she was bent over and couldn't stand up straight.
On you and telling you that you
when
are
he saw
free.
Her, Jesus called her to him
like
and said, woman,
that in your
you
body.
Are set free from
what's
your
that,
sickness.
What's that like?
He placed his hands
maybe
on her.
Maybe it's not just a physical thing. Maybe you can relate to stagnancy and discouragement
God.
Of a problem that runs 18
The synagogue
years
leader,
deep.
Incensed that Jesus had
like
healed on the Sabbath, responded,
problem.
There are 6 days during which work
How
is permitted.
Would that become
Come
a story
and be healed on those days,
of
not
your
on
life.
The Sabbath
like, I'm the person who has filled in the blank. Like, I'm the
Lord
person
replied,
who's failed.
Hypocrites.
I'm the person
Don't
who
each
gets
of
rejected.
You on the Sabbath untie your ox or donkey from its stall
loneliness.
And lead it out to get a drink?
How does that old problem become
your isn't it necessary that this woman, a daughter of Abraham, bound by Satan
for
18 long
like an
years
accusation against you.
Be set free from her bondage.
What would you need to be
on the
free
Sabbath
for
day.
This to not
and when
be
he said these things,
anymore.
All his opponents were put to shame.
What would it take? And what would it
the
take?
Those in the crowd rejoiced at the
praise
extraordinary
God,
things
not as like
he was
a forced
doing.
Thing you try to do at church, but as that something just kind of emanates from you, like water flows.
When I read this lately,
joy, gratitude,
the 18 years,
what would do
is
that?
What resonates for me.
Or maybe you
I don't
hear
have
the story and you can relate to
kind of
Jesus,
pain
like
that.
You're aware
when
of someone with a big old problem
that, means
that hasn't
a lot
been solved.
To me.
You're in relationship with someone you care about who's chronic
time.
Pain or chronic struggle.
Some of us, like the majority, great
Maybe
majority
like
of
Jesus
our lifespan.
Has power or resources that
in
you
In my life,
have,
18 years ago today,
like
my wife Grace and I were not yet expecting our first child.
That would bring
we have three now. One's about to leave home.
How?
No soon, but not yet.
Be a powerful presence
18 years ago, I hadn't realized this until I was reading this passage. 18 years ago, I had just dropped out of a seminary program to become a pastor. I was like,
on the periphery. That works
and
well.
I was getting ready to start my first day as a teacher
in
the Boston
in
Public
the
Schools
crowd of
18 years ago. For all of us, 18 years ago, the World Trade Towers were standing tall in New York City. It was 3 weeks before September 11th, 2001.
Does this interaction offend us in some way, bother us?
A lot has happened
in
18 years. A lot has happened in our shared public life. An awful lot has happened in our personal
life,
certainly in my life, too.
We'll read a, passage two,
a lot of that
three,
is really good.
Four times.
I wouldn't want to go back,
time, try and
not in a heartbeat.
Practice with me. You can read
but
the words
some,
that are in your program
let's
if
call
you like.
Disabling
you can just
spirits,
listen. You can even
too.
Close your eyes if you're comfortable.
I think of
that
like in our
people,
public life, like the anti-immigration fears,
yourself,
the white supremacy, like the many habits of violence that have grown in our nation since 9/11 for many reasons. I look at my
Jesus
own life and I see a lot of things I love, but I see some wear on these tires too over the past 18 years. See some ways of being an adult in the world that I don't like entirely and I don't always know how to undo.
When he saw
and to imagine Jesus in worship with us today, seeing us, seeing me, like putting his hands on me and saying, you are set free.
Praised God.
That's been really powerful to me.
The synagogue leader.
Like I'm not a nobody to Jesus that I'm seeing. That I'm not a distraction or a burden from something more important going on, that I'm a person Jesus welcomes, that Jesus has time for. It's powerful to me that 18 years isn't too much for Jesus. That it's not an inevitability. It's not too long or too late. That's encouraging to me that there's more room for freedom. There's room for more light in my life. That even things I would think of very crusty old problems, like just who I am, it's not even a problem anymore. It's like my identity. But that can still change.
At the extraordinary
I thought that line from Shakespeare that I think would be true for Jesus in this case, that the past is prologue, not
when
destiny.
I read this lately.
I think, the past does shape who I am. It shapes who we are today. It tells a story of who we are and how we get here. But today there's still like freedom for all kinds of possibilities.
Years,
our past is not written our story.
A lot to me.
And as I'm kind of practicing this imaginative reading in this passage, that's what I hear this week.
Great majority of our life
18 years, Steve.
In my life, 18 years.
Imagine myself
today,
as a tired person.
My wife,
Jesus
Grace, and
encounters.
I were not yet expecting. Our
I see,
first
like,
child.
Our nation, too, like our public life, is this kind of stooped over woman, badly in need of healing. And I feel Jesus
ago, I
telling me,
this,
telling us all,
18 years ago, I had just
I'm here for
out
those
of a
things
seminary
that
program
run 18 years deep.
And I was getting ready to start my first day as a teacher.
And you can bet, like, this has given me a lot of things to
for all of us,
think about and to
18
talk about
years ago, the World
Trade
Jesus. Towers were standing tall.
That's sort of the point
States
of this imaginative reading in the life of Jesus.
September 11th,
it doesn't tell us what these passages mean, like, for all times, for all people.
Years.
It's not magic that suddenly changes our lives,
our
but it's an invitation to connect with Jesus, to be with Jesus, to talk with Jesus about the ways his life and his words
really
encourage
good.
Us
I wouldn't
or provoke
back.
Us or move us or trouble us
but
or in any way speak to us.
Disabling spirits too.
in our reaction, we have this invitation to connect with Jesus, to make friends with Jesus, and over time to see what that kind of communicative friendship and connection does in us. We know from the work of Brené Brown, from many other people, that the best way to be less alone, to be less addicted, to be less discouraged, isn't solutions so much as this kind of connection.
In the world that I don't,
this friendship we can share with a Jesus who accompanies us, like, doesn't provide all the connection that we need in life. Like, we need contemporary human companions that we can hear and see and touch and all that. But a friendship with Jesus is pretty great still. And does certainly provide us, really offer us some things that other friends can't do.
Like, I'm not a nobody to Jesus.
And we make friends with Jesus,
not
really by faith, profession, or baptism, certainly not by accident, but we kind of walk into, we experience this friendship with Jesus through this kind of spiritual practice.
That it's not an inevitability.
The imaginative Bible reading, the Ignatian Bible reading, I'm describing, and we're trying to try out just a little bit today. It's one way we can
even
practice
things I would think of very
what is something
crusty,
like half
problems.
Of the
like
Christian tradition.
Who I am, it's not even a problem
practice.
Anymore. It's like my identity.
This is the half that is technically known as cataphatic spirituality. Now, you don't have to know that what that word cataphatic means. It's fine with me if you forget it after today. In fact, if you need to like tune out for 1 or 2 minutes of today's talk, like, this would be the best time. Have your space out moment. Talk to your neighbor or whatever. But the reason I'm going to offer this for a minute is sometimes I think it is helpful to know some context. Sometimes it's nice to know that like we're not just making things up, that we're part of a history, that we're part of a tradition, that can like part of a legacy that can still speak to us, be useful to us. So 2 weeks ago, I shared was kind of the first half of the sermon. 2 weeks ago, I shared that most spiritual practice of two types. It's using these Greek words, apophatic, meaning away from words, or it's cataphatic, meaning through words, like with language. And so I introduced us to apophatic spirituality 2 weeks ago, because a reservoir, and in many of the places of faith, or even just not a lack of kind of particular faith or religious tradition many of us come from, this is less familiar to most of us. And I think it could be really powerful and timely and helpful to us. So apophatic, again, means away from speaking.
It doesn't.
So apophatic spirituality involves things like choosing silence.
It's not magic.
Involves things like being alone. But it's and being still with our bodies or our minds in our crazy, busy, and active times.
About the ways his life and his words
apophatic spiritual practice aims to empty our minds, to empty our hearts, to kind of empty ourselves of trouble, to empty ourselves of distraction, and try to find some stillness and find some peace. Apophatic spirituality tries to empty our minds and our faith of false ideas about God, to rid ourselves of unhealthy. Helpful or untrue or kind of too small notions about God. Apophatic spiritual practice acknowledges that God is not many things.
This friendship we can share with a Jesus.
God is not, for instance, like our personal spiritual possession. In the normal way we use our word, God is not even like our friend or like our buddy. Like God is bigger. God is larger. God's more mysterious than our words can handle.
Certainly provide
we
us
can never get to the far end of God, no matter how
well.
High or how kind of deep we try
make
to go.
Friends with Jesus,
and so to try apophatic spiritual practice,
faith,
I recommend what's known as
baptism,
centering prayer, taking
accident,
like 5 minutes, maybe up to 20 minutes,
experience
in silence with a single
with
word, a phrase that you associate as true with God,
the imaginative
and to let that center your attention when you find yourself distracted. I called it a kind of holy spacing out.
It's
a useful spiritual practice for gaining peace, for gaining humility, for growing in wisdom, even in times when we don't know everything that we believe about God. I think this spiritual practice is really useful and grounding.
It's fine with me if you forget it after today.
But to me, it's been complemented by the beauty of the other half of the tradition. This kind of technical terms gets called cataphatic spiritual practice.
The reason I'm going to offer
cataphatic uses words in the imagination. Cataphatic spiritual practice involves things that are more common in churches, like singing or praying with our words. Cataphatic is an emptying. It's filling our consciousness with God. It's welcoming God's presence in all the mundane and extraordinary thoughts and people and events of our lives.
It's using these Greek words. words. So apophatic
spirituality, like without words, is a kind of humble ascent to this large and mysterious God. A cataphatic spirituality welcomes God's descent to us. Welcomes that God's presence as a speaking, breathing human named Jesus of Nazareth means God is forever present to us.
And I think it could be really powerful and timely to us. So apophatic, again, means away from.
While it's good wisdom to like recognize the limits of our knowledge, the limits of our friendship with God, cataphatic spiritual practice lets us like make and grow and enjoy a friendship with God at all times, in all places. And so at Reservoir, we've tried to kind of teach and model this side of the tradition a lot more. We've tried to model different ways of cataphatic spiritual practice, conversational prayer, where we talk. We try to make space to kind of listen to God or perceive God communicating to us in some way.
Our minds,
we've shared a kind of beautiful practice called Emmanuel Prayer, where we imaginatively welcome Jesus to be God with us in our best and our worst experiences.
Apophatic spiritual practice and from the present. Acknowledges that God is.
And today, I'm recommending to you this old Ignatian practice of reading the Bible stories of the life of Jesus and imaginatively finding our place in them, finding those stories' place in our lives. And again, this for me was a big part of my spiritual practice last year. Doing this several days a week, a couple of things happened.
Can never get to the far end of.
One is I got recaptivated by the Jesus that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John write about in the Bible. Jesus again and again just strikes me as like the most alive human being I could ever conceive of, the most provocative person that ever lived that I could ever imagine or conceive of.
Attention when you find yourself.
And secondly, these stories became a starting point for receiving more of Jesus' friendship into my life today. And rather than like keep talking about that in the abstract some more, I want to share one more story that for me has helped move me into this growing friendship with Jesus. It's another story from Luke that, like the first one we read, has to do with Jesus and Sabbath. Sabbath is a weekly day off. And it's also both then and now like a centerpiece of Jewish cultural and religious practice. So a story about Jesus and Sabbath is always going to be about healthy and unhealthy religion and worship. And more broadly, a story about Jesus and Sabbath is going to be about rest and wellness, too. And entering my year and exercises last year, lonelier, sadder, more stressed than I wanted to be. I had a lot to learn about rest and wellness.
So
here's the second story.
Mysterious God.
I believe it's also in your program.
Cataphatic spirituality welcomes God's descent.
One Sabbath, as Jesus was going through the wheat fields, his disciples were picking the heads of wheat, rubbing them in their hands, and eating them. Some Pharisees said, "Why are you breaking the Sabbath law?" And Jesus replied, "Haven't you read what David and his companions did when they were hungry? He broke the law. By going into God's house and eating the bread of the presence, which only the priest can eat, he also gave some of the bread to his companions. And he said to them, 'The human one is Lord of the Sabbath.'"
A friendship with God at all times.
Now, I found that when I read this imaginatively, a single mental image comes to mind. Like, our imaginations aren't clean slates. They're filled with, like, all the thoughts we've ever had, the cheesy movies we've seen, like, things people have said to us. And in my case, there's this bit from the Russell Crowe Gladiator movie, which, like, I think I mentioned twice this summer, a movie of the summer or something, right? But I've watched that movie, like, many times, and there's this one visual moment that pops up many times in the film where you see this main character, like, walking along the fields with a hand kind of like going through the wheat fields. And in Gladiator, that image like evokes a lot of things. It evokes this like deeply sad person of the main character, sad part of the main character's story, but also speaks to these themes of like family and home and togetherness and life beyond the grave and all kinds of like really warm things too. And so anyway, that's quirky to me, right? That's probably not what will come into your head if you read the story many times. But all to say, like, rather than be self-conscious or embarrassed by the fact that, like, when I read this passage, I try to imagine, like, that's all I see at first. Like, that's what's in my imagination. So I run with that. I let it be. When I read this passage, as a result, I'm, like, always one of Jesus' students. Just, like, walking along with my hand, going through the wheat. Imagine myself in this field of grain.
Most provocative.
And I think eating uncooked wheat is really gross. I've like never, you know, tried a piece of like spaghetti or a wheat berry uncooked and like enjoyed that experience. But I don't know, I just take the passages like word for it. This is like a nice thing to do. But like there I am with the friends, like grabbing wheat and rolling it, chomping it down. It's like delicious in my imagination.
But for me,
again, in my imagination, like someone's annoyed for some reason at this.
It's another story.
Someone's ticked off that I'm having a good day. Like, I'm doing so well. Jesus and Sabbath. I don't know why, but someone resents my free time.
And it's
someone
also
resents
then and now,
my
like
peace.
A centerpiece of Jewish
someone resents like me moving toward wellness.
It's a story about Jesus.
And as I kind of run
Sabbath
with that, I'm like, actually,
going to be
I've
healthy
experience
and
like,
unhealthy
surprisingly many times.
And worship.
And I hear Jesus say, in any person, any system,
Sabbath,
any rule that stands against flourishing
and entering my
is,
year
has
and
gotten off course.
Year,
that's no longer valid.
Sadder,
Jesus is in charge to reverse that.
To
Jesus, the human one, is for all of our and our larger collective flourishing. Another version of the story says that people weren't made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made
Sabbath
for people.
Jesus was
again,
going
Sabbath doesn't mean a lot for you. People weren't
his
made
were
for religion. Religion was made
them
for people.
In their hands
people
them.
Weren't made for God's
so Pharisees
rules.
Said,
God's
why are you
rules
breaking
were made
the Sabbath
for people.
Law?
And as I hear those
Jesus
words,
replied, haven't you read what David and his companions did
take
when
a deep
they were
breath.
Hungry? He broke
I think
the law.
Jesus is telling me
by going
I
into
was
God's
made
house and eating the bread of
freedom.
The presence, which only the priest can eat.
I was made for peace of mind.
He said to them, the human.
I was made for joy. I was made to do
now,
good things with people I like and who like me. I was
our
made for connection. I was made for flourishing. And Jesus is really invested in the restoring
seen, like
of all
us.
That
case,
to me being a deeply flourishing human being. Jesus brings up this kind of life and death urgent situation in the tales of old King David.
There's this one visual moment that pops
like,
up many
doesn't seem
times
to apply at all in this situation.
Like
someone's like, David's about to be killed. There's this crazy life and death thing, and so he like breaks
fields.
This rule that God has
and
spreads the food out to
like
survive.
A lot of things.
But the cost of that is all the priests
like
there like slaughtered. This is weird historical thing Jesus brings
story.
Up.
But also speaks
but
to
that
these
sort of
like
speaks to me again, like, wow, there's an urgency
togetherness
to
and life beyond the grave.
There's an importance in restoring my wellness.
And so anyway, that's quirky to me, right? That's probably
that's
not
a
what
high
comes to
priority
to read
God.
The story many times.
It
but
matters.
All the same, like rather than be self-conscious or embarrassed
me.
By the fact that like, when I read this passage,
hope for
imagine,
me,
like,
a joyful
I see
me.
Verse, like, that's what's in my imagination.
Peaceful
so
me.
I run with that.
Loves life for sure.
Let it be. When I read
Jesus
this passage, as a result,
that.
I'm like always one of Jesus'
a
students.
Flourishing
like
me too, though, is a lot more good to the people I care
imagine
about.
Imagine myself in
more
this
service
field of
to my family and friends.
And I think
a
eating
flourishing me
is
more powerful
really
in my job.
Like never,
a flourishing
know,
me is more
like
available for
or
service
or
and
like
justice, more useful to the world
I don't know,
at large.
I just take
and
the passage
Jesus
like
really
word for it. This is like a nice thing to do.
That,
like, there I am with the friends, like grabbing wheat, you know, rolling it.
I hear Jesus
down.
Telling
like
me that in a way that like this story sets in a
again in my imagination.
Me,
like someone's annoyed for some reason at this.
With a hand in the grain, and it like all
someone's ticked off that I'm having a good day
in a deeper way than just saying those words out loud.
I don't know why, but someone resents
tells me
why.
Taking a nap.
Someone resents my peace.
Taking a walk.
Someone resents like me moving toward wellness.
Spending time in silence.
As I kind of run
day.
With that. I'm like, I actually have had
spending
that experience.
Time, like not very strategic
times.
Time. Like, in
and I hear Jesus say, in any person,
my, like,
any system,
I don't actually
any
believe Jesus imaginary,
but to,
you know, an outsider would look like talking to my imaginary friend. Like,
is,
what? That's
gotten
important.
Off course. Like, no
eating a good
valid.
Meal.
Jesus is in charge.
Calling
and
seeing a friend.
Jesus, the human
one. These are parts
of
my flourishing.
All of our and our larger
Jesus tells me Jesus is really protective of.
Another version of the story says that people weren't made for the
Jesus wants me to do good in the world.
Sabbath was made for people. Again, if
there's a ton of problems out there, some of them on my part, to do something about,
for
sure, that's very important. Jesus wants me to love people, even to a point of pain and sacrifice, for sure.
Like take a deep
but
breath.
Jesus tells me he wants me to love
I think
life.
Jesus is
too.
Telling me I was made.
Those things are actually
free.
Tied together. It's really important.
I was made for peace.
This is like
mind.
I don't know. I feel like this is what making friends with Jesus
I was
does for
made
me.
For joy.
I could go into these stories
I was
and see where my imagination takes
to
me,
do
and every time it hits me like really
I like
powerful,
like
true
me.
Places like this.
I was made for connection.
Jesus,
I was made for
kind of
flourishing.
Growing
and
friendship
Jesus
with Jesus
really
has been this game-changing,
the restoring,
grounding gift
all that.
For me.
To me, being a deeply
really
flourishing
want that
human
to be
being,
true for you
Jesus
too.
Bringing,
okay, I'm selling
brings
that
up the,
this, seems really
this kind of life and death urgent
and so
situation.
So I'm going to wrap up our time.
Just
chatting
King
about
David.
Like a couple ways you can try that if you
like,
feel like
seem to
friendship
apply
with Jesus
all
is like
situation.
A
like someone's
like a foreign concept,
killed,
like a,
there's this
maybe
crazy
even slightly
life
creepy
thing,
way of putting like more faith than you want in your life. I'm going to give you like simple ways to try this out.
But
if friendship with Jesus is kind of a rich phrase
there,
for
like
you,
this is weird,
but feels maybe slightly
like
more theory than lived reality these days, for whatever
sort of
reason, like no
again,
problem
like,
with that. That happens in life, but I think
there's
trying this stuff out does actually
story,
kind of make it more real again,
wellness,
open up something more powerful again.
That's like high priority for God.
And so I always like to share something. It's not just a personal spiritual practice, like an invitation
me.
Or a public living, a whole life flourishing.
Hopeful
so
me.
I'll start with that just to remind you that from my perspective, from my time with my friend Jesus in these passages, I feel like the gift I want to give to you today is that your friend Jesus is invested in your freedom to live, to really be alive. So to ask yourself today, like, how will you cherish and love life today?
Flourishing me is more available for service,
high priority to the divine creator kind of question. Jesus is really invested. And then the practice around this growing friendship with Jesus is, again, to just try out, choose a story from the Gospels. If you know them well, you can start with a particular book that makes sense to you or a story that you like. But kind of the weird stories that you don't understand, they work for this. Choose a story from the Gospels. Read it slowly and imaginatively, multiple times. Asking, like, where do I find myself today in the story?
Spending time
and then how does that speak to me? And then talk to Jesus about that.
Not very strategic time, like in friendship.
Repeat this as often as you like, again and again.
I don't actually believe Jesus is imaginary, but an outsider would look like talking to an imaginary friend. Like, well, that's important. Eating a good meal, like calling and seeing a friend. Like, these are parts of my flourishing that Jesus tells me Jesus is really protective of. Those really matter. Jesus wants me to do good in the world. There's a ton of problems out there. Some of them are my part to do something about, for sure. That's very important. Jesus wants me to love people, even to a point of pain and sacrifice, for sure. But Jesus tells me he wants me to love life, too. Those things are actually tied together. It's really important. This is like, I don't know, I feel like this is what making friends with Jesus does for me. Like, I go into these stories, and I see where my imagination takes me, and every time it takes me, like, really powerful, true places like this. Jesus, and this kind of growing friendship with Jesus, has been this game-changing, grounding gift for me. I really want that to be true for you, too. Like, I am selling that today. This seems really valuable to me. And so I'm going to wrap up our time just chatting about, like, a couple ways you can try, that if you feel like friendship with Jesus is like a foreign concept, like a maybe even slightly creepy way of putting like more faith than you want in your life. I'm gonna give you like simple ways to try this out. If friendship with Jesus is kind of a rich phrase for you, but feels maybe slightly more theory than lived reality these days, for whatever reason, like no problem with that, that happens in life, but I think trying this stuff out does actually kind of make it more real again, open up something more powerful again. And so I always like to share something that's not just a personal spiritual practice, like an invitation to a public living, a whole life flourishing. So I'll start with that just to remind you that from my perspective, from my time with my friend Jesus in these passages, I feel like the gift I want to give to you today is that your friend Jesus is invested in your freedom to live, to really be alive. So to ask yourself today, like, how will you cherish and love life today? I think that is like a strategic high priority to the divine creator kind of question for you. So I'll offer that to you today. And then the practice around this growing friendship with Jesus is, again, to just try out, choose a story from the Gospels. If you know them well, you can start with a particular book that makes sense to you or a story that you like, but even kind of the weird stories that you don't understand, they work for this. Choose a story from the Gospels. Read it slowly and imaginatively, multiple times, asking, like, where do I find myself today in the story? And then how does that speak to me? And then talk to Jesus about that. Kind of repeat this as often as you like, again and again. I think you'll find something really delightful grow in you. Can I pray for us as we try that?